Welcome to Meltdown to Mastery, empowering women to overcome midlife crisis by rewiring the subconscious mind. Feeling overwhelmed, disillusioned, stuck? We all have. Here we explore inspiration and empowerment to navigate through the tough times and move to a place where hearts soar, minds manifest, and bodies heal. Today we have Ali Cass, a former bodybuilding pro turned functional medicine health expert and fitness coach. She helps stressed out women optimize their metabolism, up-level their mindset, and shift from surviving to thriving. Welcome, Ali.
Hi, Jane. Thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, that's so interesting that you were a bodybuilding pro. I mean, that's amazing. But what was the catalyst that moved you into the world of health and fitness? I mean, fitness was being a bodybuilding pro, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. It was not the end all be all, that's for sure. I grew up an athlete. So physical fitness has always been a big part of my life. And taking care of my physical health has always been something that I have very much valued and that was ingrained in me at a young age. However, it wasn't until I was in my early 20s that I realized that I really had no idea how to actually take care of myself properly, whether that was through nutrition, through acknowledging my mental and emotional health and the role that that plays in physical health and transformation. And so I went to college, like most kids. I played basketball for a couple months at a D3 school, and I didn't have the fire or the passion for it anymore. So I decided to quit and kind of move on to other things. And what I found was that without having that structured athletic program, I was a very unhealthy kid. I had terrible eating habits. We would drink way too much alcohol. I was your typical college kid, essentially. And I didn't realize that that was a problem until I think my third year in college, when I was the heaviest that I had ever weighed. And I just realized that I was so exhausted and really lost that kind of sense of vitality that you ideally want to have throughout your entire life. I remember sitting in my bedroom one day thinking, like, why do I feel like crap? I'm unhappy with the way I feel. I'm unhappy with the way I look. And I just knew that I was way too young to be feeling that way. That was back when I still was under the impression that not feeling great was something that just happened as you aged, which I now know it's not either. But in that moment, I realized that I did not have very healthy habits. I didn't know the proper things to do to support my body physically, mentally, or emotionally. And then all of that really compounded when I graduated college shortly after my mother was diagnosed with stage 3 brain cancer. She was unfortunately given about 18 months to live, and she only made it 9 of those months. And during that period, I moved across the country to Arizona, where my parents were living at the time. And with my father, I became her primary caregiver, essentially. And that was one of the most challenging times in my life, but it also really illuminated for me what it means to truly take care of yourself and the importance of caring for yourself, particularly when you're also caring for other people, whether that's as a formal caregiver, whether that's as a mother, whether it's, you know, being a business owner, career woman, and taking care of clients or other things. And so through that process, I really started to dive into the question of what makes somebody healthy, not only physically, but mentally and emotionally, and how do I start prioritizing my own self-care again while I was, you know, tasked with essentially caring for someone else through the end of their life. So it was that process for me that really ignited my passion for health and fitness again, and really caused me to go on what I've referred to as kind of the deepest rabbit hole of my life, because the more that I learn, the more inspired and the more passionate I become about health and fitness in general. So I started training shortly after my mother passed away for my first bodybuilding show. And it's not something I actually ever had on my radar, and I didn't want to do it, but I hired a coach because I knew that I needed to get back into shape. And I just wanted to feel better. I wanted to feel excited about something. I wanted to kind of have a goal that I could focus on and work toward, because it was also helping me simultaneously through a lot of the grief and the anger that I was carrying from my mother's illness. And I loved it at the time, but I competed for about a year and a half. I got my pro status and I realized that in that process, there was still more to health. It wasn't just about looking a certain way. It wasn't about crushing, you know, 5 or 6 workouts in the gym every single week. I knew that there was a deeper level that I wanted to explore both within myself and with other women. And so that led me into the path of getting certified in functional nutrition, integrative nutrition, nutritional therapy, human metabolism, and all of these other things. And that's really where my specialty lies now. And it's something that I'm so passionate about.
Yeah. So first of all, I'm so sorry about your mom. I mean, that's so hard in itself. But it was a catalyst, wasn't it, for you to learn all of what you have, and which is a beautiful thing. It's such a gift. But yes, I want you to talk about more, because if we just focus on the outer, the exterior shell and the perfection we want to find there, it's almost detrimental, isn't it? Because it's impossible to reach perfection. Mm-hmm. And there's like a mental, you know, a mental breakdown or difficulty when, because you're always beating yourself up, aren't you, if you can't achieve that perfection. So yeah, just talk to us more about that, because that's so insightful.
Yeah, it's something that I see all the time with my clients as well. So I don't know if it's because I tend to have that kind of type A perfection oriented personality as well, but so many of the women that I work with really get stuck in that loop of perfectionism, or of you know, wanting to look a very specific way, or if they don't show up and execute at 110% every single day, they feel like they're a failure. And that's something that I did actually experience in bodybuilding. And it's one of the reasons why I started to kind of shift a different direction with my own health and fitness, because I found that while I was chasing that certain aesthetic, I was becoming very distorted in the way that I was viewing myself and my body, almost to the point where I went from one end of the spectrum, right, of just kind of having that YOLO mindset, going out and drinking, eating whatever I wanted, not treating my body with, you know, the proper care and respect that it deserves. And then going totally to the other side, where I was so hyper-focused on every little thing that I was eating, every workout, every nuance, to the point where my day essentially revolved around all of those things. And I started to see how it impacted my life. I started to see how it was impacting my relationship at the time. And it wasn't until after my last bodybuilding show, where I won my pro status, that I realized like how distorted my thinking had become. And it's funny that you asked me this question, because a couple of weeks ago, I was looking back at some old photos, some check-in photos from like the process that I went through while I was bodybuilding. And at that point in time, I remember thinking like, I want to do a photo shoot just to get some materials to share on social media. And I remember thinking that, well, I'm not in stage shape. So for people who aren't really familiar with bodybuilding, stage shape is essentially the physique that you would have when you're stepping on stage. And for most people, that is not a realistic way to look or carry yourself, you know, throughout the year. And so I remember thinking like, oh, I'm not in good enough shape to do a photo shoot. And now when I look back at those pictures from that exact time period that I was having these thoughts, like I was so lean and so skinny actually that I don't even recognize myself. And so I had no idea that that was, you know, how I actually looked on the outside, because internally, my experience and my dialogue with myself was entirely different. And I see that a lot with my clients, especially those women who really are driven by achievement and perfectionism. One thing that I do when I work with clients is we kind of try to manage both that mind and that body. So while we're working on fitness, while we're working on nutrition, while we're trying to improve and optimize health, we're also analyzing, you know, what are our beliefs about our body? How do we view ourselves? What is our kind of self-identity when it comes to how we show up in the world and how we view our own health and ourselves? And so we kind of work on rewriting that narrative if it's not supporting someone's, you know, overall bigger picture of what better health looks like. And that includes mental health, emotional health, and physical health. Sorry, I feel like I just gave you like the 10-minute version of that.
Oh, no, it's perfect. So what were some of the things that you were thinking, you know, then that you realized were so not just negative, but, you know, that talk that was not positive compared to now? Like, what are the big shifts in your mind?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd say the biggest thing for me now is that I try to be very intentional about balancing what I need to do to get me to my goals, if that is, you know, health, fitness, career, whatever that is, but also designing those in such a way that it allows me to live a life that is congruent with my values, and that is a life that I want to live. So one of the things that I realized when I was going through that process of bodybuilding is that I was, like I said, I was structuring my entire day and my entire life around, okay, what meals do I have access to today? What can I eat? When am I going to eat? Everything was so food centric. When am I going to get my workout in? And I would become very stressed and anxious if I couldn't control every single variable. So for me, it was a way of practicing control in my life. And so part of that process of, you know, shifting out of that has really been actively practicing just letting go and learning to focus on controlling, you know, what I can control and not becoming hyper-focused on what I can't, or not becoming so focused on controlling every variable to the point where it is creating distortions in my life, or it is hindering my ability to go on a vacation and fully enjoy myself in the moment, or, you know, have a night out with friends or things like that. So that's been one of the biggest shifts for me from that time period. But also learning to just be less judgmental about how I look or how I think I look, because obviously in the bodybuilding world, it's a very aesthetically driven sport. And it does create a lot of body dysmorphia or distorted thinking about the way that you should look all the time. And I often tell people think like, wow, that must have been really difficult to train for a bodybuilding show like that. And it, of course, it had its own challenges, and it was, it required a lot of discipline and hard work. But the hardest part for me personally was after the show, when you're kind of going back into a normal routine and you no longer look like this shredded, ripped, you know, athlete. And so that's something that I talk about a lot, because a lot of that distortion kind of happens after the fact when you're no longer in that place. And I think, you know, anyone who's been an athlete or has played sports in their life can kind of relate to that as well, because it's very similar to that kind of life after sports mentality. But those were the biggest shifts from then to kind of where I'm at now. And also viewing my health in such a more holistic way, and having true appreciation for more about what my body does for me on a day-to-day basis, as opposed to what it looks like.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Thank you.
I love the way you describe that shift. And it's more about self-love and going with the flow, isn't it?
100%. Yep. Yeah.
So how do you teach people to reach the best of themselves, especially with weight loss, right? It can be such a yo-yo game. And, you know, you take on a pretty holistic approach that includes calories, hormones, and stress. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes. So when I work with someone, the first thing that we do, of course, is identify, you know, what it is that they really want to accomplish, why they want to accomplish it, and then what that gap is between where they're at now versus where they want to be. So in that process, I like to really dig in with people, because a lot of times I find, particularly with women and when it comes to weight loss or any type of aesthetic goal, a lot of times there's a deeper rooted reason for why someone thinks that they want to get to that goal. And there might be deeper reasons there. Then sometimes we find that that's not even necessarily what they actually want to accomplish when we look at what it is that they're trying to achieve at a root level, but they think that's what they should do, or they think that's what they should want or what they should strive for. So I really try to get to know someone, get to know their values, get to know what's important to them, what kind of life they want to live, how they want to show up in their life, and then how we can design a plan for them that's going to improve the way that they feel in order to get them to that point. And I find that when we shift the focus to that as well, the physical changes as far as body composition or weight loss or, you know, maybe looking toned and losing fat, because that's a goal for a lot of people, those come with the process when we're focusing on those other things. So I try to shift the focus, not so much on that, how we look, as opposed to how we're feeling, how we're functioning, how this is enhancing the way that we show up in our lives, in our careers, in our relationships, our relationship with ourselves, and all of those things. So that's, you know, that's the approach that I really like to take. Yeah. When I start working with someone.
Yeah, like I find when people just get to that place of self-love, of course, everything else falls into place, because if you love yourself, you're going to exercise just the right amount, eat the right things. You know, so many things fall into place.
Mm-hmm. And I love the question too. And I really love talking about self-love, because it has been quite a journey for me. And one thing that I really feel passionately about around that topic is that I think that there are a lot of people out there who, you know, yell like, we just need more self-love. But it can breed a sense of complacency when you just try to adopt that, like, you know, I love myself the way I am, so I'm not going to change anything. I'm a firm believer that you can 100% love yourself and respect your body and just have that deep sense of nurture for yourself and still desire to have better health, potentially have better, you know, fitness goals, or want to make changes or improvements in whatever it is. So I think that there's a lot of people think that those two things are mutually exclusive. And in reality, they're not, because like you said, when we really do get to that place of that deep level of love for ourselves, we're typically no longer engaging in the things that are making us, you know, feel like crap in the first place. So I think that's something that oftentimes gets misconstrued, especially on social media. Mm-hmm. But I do think that, you know, one of the best practices to love yourself is to cultivate discipline, to do the things that actually make you feel your best, and know that it's okay to love yourself and still want to change something about yourself, because none of us are perfect. And life in itself is one like long journey of continuous growth. So I think that people also should understand that you can change and you can grow and still love who you are now, who you were 5 years ago, and who you're going to be 5 years from now.
Yeah. And it's so important to realize that, okay, I love myself, therefore I'm going to eat certain things and exercise, but it's not a quick process. And if you love yourself, then it doesn't have to become this demanding thing that happens instantly, right? It's a process over time. So beautiful. But where do you find stress really affects people when they want to achieve these goals? Because that's part of the mind-body connection, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. 100%. I find with the women that I work with primarily, I work with a lot of moms, a lot of, you know, very career-driven women, business women, entrepreneurs, people who are very success and achievement oriented. And one of the things that I see with them, obviously, is that stress, whether it is work stress, relationship stress, just the stress of having to take care of all the things on a daily basis, is a very common theme in their lives. And how I tend to see that play out is hormone imbalance, gut dysfunction, adrenals being constantly taxed because we're constantly having to produce stress hormones like cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine. And so what that typically does, at least in the women that I work with, is they just become so depleted, both from a nutrient perspective, energy, everything is just in depletion mode, but we're continuing to push because we, you know, have these goals that we're trying to achieve and we're trying to show up in a certain way in our life. So I see that play out though with a lot of my women through hormone imbalances and gut issues primarily.
Yeah. So it works against them.
100%.
And often we're unaware of it. So how do you help them through that?
It depends on the client. So a lot of times, you know, it's not realistic to say that we just will get rid of stress completely, because that's just the world that we live in. And obviously with life demands and having to care for families and work and care for businesses, it's not like we can just mitigate all of that. So depending on the client, we try to, of course, get rid of unnecessary stressors if possible. A lot of times I work with clients on reframing how they're viewing stress. So I don't know if you're familiar with growth versus fixed mindsets. There is benefit to viewing stress with a growth mindset and viewing it more as an opportunity as opposed to something that's a pain in the butt or a hindrance, or it's like that just like, oh, that daunting, this is just another thing I have to take care of. So I work with a lot of women on helping them shift their mindset around their stressors, particularly if it's something that we can't necessarily get rid of. So while I encourage people to look at their life and what's, you know, maybe not working in their favor or what they really like and helping them with those things, of course, I'm not going to tell someone like, oh, just quit your job, because obviously they probably have bills to pay and they need to work. So if it's something that is a little bit more outside of their immediate control, a lot of times we just reframe the mindset around the stress and try to use it as an opportunity for growth and an opportunity to, you know, make them more of who they want to be. I also work with clients. I just asked a client the other day she told me, she said, I live in stress. And so one of the things we started talking about was stress as part of her self-identity. So she's someone who is a mother, is an executive, executive level of her career. And so I asked her, is stress part of your identity? And we kind of, after talking and digging in a little bit, we realized that that is something that has become so ingrained as part of her experience in her life that she now creates unnecessary stress for herself. She's one of those people who has to constantly be working, can't sit still, even if there's nothing really pertinent at hand that needs to be taken care of. She's constantly creating things that she has to take care of.
Yeah.
So through that process, we were able to, you know, look at how she's identifying herself and realize that while she does have a lot of stress in her life, some of that is not necessarily something that she needs to take on every day. So we've been kind of chipping away at getting rid of some of those things through that process. And then of course, you know, making sure that we're sleeping properly, we're recovering properly, we're nourishing our body so that we can physically respond to the demands of stress in life. And then making sure that what we're doing from a fitness, nutrition, and lifestyle perspective is not, you know, counteracting that. So working with the stress and making sure that we're not also adding to it is a big thing for me.
Yeah, it's interesting how stress sometimes can be part of our identity because we feel like we're not achieving enough unless we're stressed, right? My husband's a bit like that. I don't know if you're listening, Mark.
Yeah. No, I mean, I can relate. Like one of my narratives for a long time was like, I'm so busy. And I had to stop saying that. Like I had to stop every time someone was like, how are you? Or how have things been? Instead of saying like, oh, I've been so busy. You know, I've tried to shift that narrative because I realized that was becoming, you know, just part of my story. So when I was creating a lot of busyness for myself or a lot of pressure to constantly be busy by continuing to try to take on more or achieve more, that it was actually, you know, literally making me like physically sick and just, I was not enjoying life the way that I would like to.
Yeah. So one of the things that can even add more stress is going to the gym, because let's say if you're a mother with three children and even getting to the gym feels like next to impossible if you have a job as well.
Mm-hmm.
What's the solution there? I kind of watch my teenage daughters. They're in the phase of going to the gym. And I'm like, that's wonderful, but wait till you have a job and kids, and, you know, and then you have to figure out how to make it part of your life to stay fit, you know?
100%.
What are some of the solutions that you...
So for me, at kind of a foundational level, I really try to tailor what I'm doing with a client to what is going to be feasible for their life. So I have, you know, women who just had a baby a year ago, let's say, and they're a stay-at-home mom, or they might work, but they only have childcare during certain hours. So that's certainly something that we have to take into consideration. So sometimes you know, that means either doing a workout at home or only going to the gym certain days a week. Sometimes that means trying to work out while their child is napping. I actually have, I have a mom right now who's a client of mine, and she's wonderful. She has four kids, and she kind of goes through these cycles of feeling guilty almost when she takes the time to work out, because she feels like she should be spending that time with her kids. And so one thing we started doing is, her kids are like, I think, you know, 7, 9, and 11. And I think she has one that's slightly older than that. So some of the littler ones, we've been kind of incorporating her workouts to include them, just so she can also feel like she is, you know, getting that sufficient time in with them as well, and isn't having that guilt. So it really just depends on the client. But I am a believer that the best health, nutrition, and fitness program is the one that someone is going to adhere to. So if I tell someone that they need to go to the gym 5 times a week and they can't, then that's, you know, that's not a good program for them. It's also not good coaching on my part, but I wouldn't do that. So, you know, really taking the time to understand someone and understand what their life demands are and what their life circumstances are like, and then being able to kind of meet them in the middle and create a program that's going to get them the best result that they can get with the circumstances that they're working with, has been something that is just such a foundational part of what I do with people. Yeah. But also, you know, things for people who have a hard time kind of making it a priority, but maybe still have some room in their schedule for those types of things. A lot of times we just have to work on scheduling it in. So I have a lot of clients who, like, they would not dare miss a meeting with their boss or, you know, with a client or with something else. And so we work on, you know, treating those as appointments that they have with themselves, and treating them in the same manner and professionalism that they would if they were showing up for someone else. So depending on the person, those are kind of some of the approaches that we take.
Yeah. And just to get creative, right? I remember when my girls were little, I always loved going to classes and the gym, and I was a dancer all my life. So it was really important to me. And, you know, you feel like you've lost a bit of yourself when you can't do that. And I had twins. So I got a bit creative. I took them to circus classes where they would also allow adults. So we both got to go to circus.
I love that.
Right? And I did the same thing with gymnastics. So I found classes that were teaching gymnastics, but had the adult class at the same time. So, and oh, another trick I've always, in this, I try to tell all my patients is, no matter what happens, say you had a busy, busy day. And for me, it's always been, I will do 50 sit-ups before bed and at least a little bit of weights, like even if it's only 3 minutes. So if I reach the end of the day, and I often do it anyway, but I will at least do that five minute workout before I go to bed. So it's just that discipline that you say, that you just decide you're going to always have that physical activity and then stick to it.
I love that. Yeah. And I think that's such a beautiful, like, testament to, it's not about, you know, doing a long workout or doing something perfectly every single time, right? Like, it's more about the consistency of, even if it means just showing up for 5 minutes, but continuing to show up, because that adds up exponentially over, you know, 4 months, 6 months, a year's time. Those things matter. And so I think that one thing, at least for a lot of the women I work with who are very success driven and are very oriented around perfection, is helping them realize that, you know, that something is better than nothing. And when you continue to practice the discipline of just at least doing something, you're continuing to work that mental muscle and showing up for yourself. And I think that, going back to the discussion of self-love, that cultivating that ability to show up for yourself like that, even if it is only for 5 minutes at a time, really starts to build that self-trust. And I think that a lot of us who have maybe spent periods of our life putting other people above ourselves, we don't necessarily have that strong sense of trust as far as, I'm going to show up for myself. So I think that's the wonderful way to also cultivate that in that process.
Right. And it's just that commitment to yourself. And no matter what, you're at least going to do that. I think I started that when I was 12. And I've gone through periods like, you know, where you move or something like that, where I'll get out of it, but I'll get right back into it. Mm. And it reminds you every day that, you know, at least do this and hopefully much more.
Right. I love that. I'm going to do 50 sit-ups tonight before bed.
Yeah, it's just my little thing. So talk to us quickly about diet, because that's another, like, you know, we get into these diet phases. And I mean, personally, I've always eaten well 80% of the time. And that can shift into whatever diet, but a good diet. And then 20% of the time, I'll allow myself, you know, some fun things, right? Because you can't be 100% committed all the time. Right. But tell us what your perspective is.
I'm very much of that same school of thought. So I think it is very unrealistic to assume that we're going to stick to a specific way of eating or a specific plan 100% of the time. And also it's not realistic, you know, for people who do have jobs, who travel, who have kids, who, you know, have life circumstances that don't always allow them to have 100% control. And I think that when it comes to diet, for a lot of people, it's actually a way to practice control in their life. But again, that kind of gets to the kind of unhealthy side of things. So, I always encourage clients to, whether, you know, we're truly following like an 80-20 rule, or if we're just allowing for some flexibility in their diet throughout the week, and mental flexibility as well, like you mentioned, with just being able to have something that you enjoy is very important. I am very much an advocate of, you know, taking a whole foods approach over any specific diet or style of eating. I much prefer working with clients on kind of teaching them how to eat in a way that feels best for them, as opposed to saying, okay, you know, we're going to adopt this specific style of eating or this particular diet. Now, I do have clients who have a lot of gut dysbiosis, or who might have certain things going on that warrant a, you know, particular strategy or style of eating for a period of time. But I'm very clear with people that this is, when we're doing any kind of approach like that, it is, you know, we're doing it for a specific goal, not because this is, you know, how they should eat for the rest of their lives, unless they feel great with it, they love it, it has everything they want. But I rarely, you know, have people, you know, follow a, what most people would think of as a diet, as far as like a diet that has a name to it. Mm-hmm. So I really focus more on how somebody eats, you know, how they feel best. So for instance, I don't eat gluten or dairy. I'm not anti-gluten or dairy. I just find personally for me, I feel so much better when I don't eat them. And I have a lot of clients who actually feel the same. So occasionally we'll go through an elimination diet. We'll see what is triggering them. If they are, you know, having a lot of symptoms, if they're having gut dysfunction or other underlying issues that we want to look at. But I just personally choose not to eat that way. Now, that does not mean that I don't, you know, indulge in some sweets or some fun foods, because I certainly do that. But those are kind of my personal parameters, where I just know that I'd rather not, because I feel better when I don't. And so helping clients as well become educated on what helps them feel good and like how they feel their best, and encouraging them to, you know, primarily eat in that way. And not so from a place of restriction, but from a place of wanting to use food to feel their best. And of course, you know, enjoying life in the process is very important.
Yeah. And I find proportion is big too, isn't it? And it's something you have to teach yourself. One of the tricks I learned when I was a teenager, and early 20s, when you tend to indulge, I don't know, without thinking, like you said, when you were that age, but mm-hmm. I would say to myself, okay, have this much now. And if you want more in 2 hours, go have some more, mm-hmm. right? But don't eat it all right now. Let's see how we're feeling. I don't know. Yeah, it's one of the tricks that worked really well for me.
I love that. And I had something very similar, because for a long time, I was one of those people that had a really hard time not finishing my food, even if I was like, you know, pretty full beyond discomfort. Mm-hmm. And so I really had to analyze like why I was doing that, what I was trying to you know, if I was trying to fill a void, for instance, as opposed to actually doing something that, you know, makes me feel good. Otherwise, I was using food as a way to kind of cope or a way to elicit a certain emotion. And so I would practice something similar, though, where I would remind myself, like, the food is not going anywhere. You know, it's abundant. It's here. So there's no need to finish it all right now. You can come back to it, like you said, later if you want more. And that was definitely helpful for me as well when I was going through that.
Beautiful. So give us just some of your best tips before we finish out. Things that, you know, are the just to keep at the on our fingertips.
Oh my goodness, that is a great question.
Maybe some of the things that you do every day after everything that you've gone through, learned, you know, because you're an expert. So you must have some tips.
I feel like, you know, it's funny. It's like one of those questions where you're like, I have so many things to say that I have nothing to say. No, I would say one of the things that has been the most beneficial for me, and it took a long time to cultivate, and this is still very much a constant work in progress, is learning how to slow down throughout the day, whether that's, you know, slowing down when I'm making a decision about what I'm going to eat and not just acting off impulse or rushing through the decision-making process, slowing down, you know, when I'm going from appointment to appointment, really just any way that I can to just slow down for a second. And the day has been extremely helpful for my stress levels. It's been extremely helpful for me regulating my nervous system. It's been helpful in just, you know, having better conscious choices throughout the day when it comes to my health, my fitness, and really anything else in life, because I'm not just, you know, reverting back to that kind of survival state where I'm just making impulse decisions because I'm like, go, go, going. Mm-hmm. So slowing down is a big thing for me that's been very helpful in really all areas of life. And then also practicing compassion and being gentle with yourself, I think is very important in the health and fitness process, because like you said, none of us are perfect. Progress is never linear. And so learning to, you know, while you're cultivating discipline, while you're working on improving things that you want to improve, also practicing compassion for yourself and just being gentle with yourself through the process, because it's not an easy process. And when I work with women, a lot of times I find that the process actually brings up things for them. And so, you know, being gentle with oneself in that process is very important. And I think it is what helps you to maintain long-term success and also developing that self-love in the process. Because I do think that, you know, if you are setting out on a quest to have better health or better fitness or, you know, achieve whatever goal it is that you're out to achieve, if you're not learning to, you know, love yourself a little bit more in the process, I think that, you know, it's not what we really want as an outcome, right? Because I'm a firm believer that everything that we do with health and fitness should be to enhance every area of our life. And that includes the relationship with oneself. So, you know, being gentle with yourself and being compassionate.
Beautiful. Well, those are great tips. Thank you so much. Right? They're just like, if you remembered anything, those two kind of, they wrap everything up beautifully.
Thank you.
So, Ali, how do people find more of you?
So I am most active on Instagram. My handle is at AliCassHealth. And then you can also visit my website, www.alicasshealth.com. You can read a little bit more about me, my program, my methodology. And if you have any questions, I'd love to connect.
Great. And I will put those in the show notes. Thank you so much, Ali. That was brilliant.
Thank you so much for having me.